This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
Nolan Wells stayed behind on Horn Island on the 4th of July without water, transportation, or his phone, which had been left on a boat with his friends. 2 days later, a park ranger discovered his body in the water. The FBI is currently conducting forensics on that phone, investigating separate death threats linked to the case and maintaining that the local sheriff has jurisdiction, despite the island being on federal land. There's lots of questions in this case, not a lot of solid answers yet, but a lot of people who think they have solid answers based on opinions, thoughts, history, all of it. Jennifer Coffendaffer is joining myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, to discuss where this case is at right now and where it is headed. Jennifer, welcome. And are you literally coming to us from Germany today? Is that accurate?
I am in Germany, in Passau, Germany, and I'm just so glad to have you back. It was like Robin and I were trying.
Because Robin sucks. Before,
but everything's copacetic.
Well, I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be back with everybody. I was just like, wow, Germany. Now that's a little trek there. Well, glad to have you on to dive into this case. I've been following your tweets, been following everybody's reporting on this for the last several weeks when I've been gone. One of the big things on this that seems to stand out is the Snapchat. That's a big thing that is being talked about. And I think it's important to contextualize it. The family reports that Nolan's accounts were wiped clean. That has not been confirmed by Snapchat or any authorities. That's coming from the family. I don't have any reason to disbelieve it, but it is a pretty big piece if, in fact, the accounts were wiped, or was there just nothing ever put on the account to begin with on an island that doesn't have cell service? It's a fair question. It suggests a potential cover-up, and a lot of people are putting their chips in that basket. How heavily does the depth of this investigation depend on that accusation alone being true, Jen?
We may have lost her already.
We may have lost her in Germany already. Robin, I'll go to you. What do you think?
How much is the depth of the everything rely on the Snapchat?
That single, I mean, obviously there's public indictment that's going on here, but I'm curious, and obviously there's a lot of things being pulled, a lot of levers being pulled here to investigate right. this, but that is a big one. I mean, if in fact they get the phone back or Snapchat responds back and they say, yeah. Looks like this thing was wiped, and it wasn't just there was no activity. I mean, if there's no right. activity, that tells you the phone was on the boat and nobody was using Snapchat. That could be a possible explanation. But if it in fact does show somebody went onto the account and deleted it
right.
or deleted the posts, I mean, what does that say? What does that mean for the investigation?
So,
if it's a big if, I'm
yeah,
saying that.
Yeah, exactly. And we talked about it yesterday, you know, when we were talking about with Eric, you know, what it would take to kind of elevate this investigation to probable cause on things, right? And go to before judges get subpoenas. And that would be one of them, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
I think what you do as an investigator and what Jen and I did throughout our career is you start with the laws of probability, as I always do in cases like we did yesterday. I look at the research. I look at the number of riptide drownings compared to number of deaths by homicide in areas like this. And so you just start with a general idea. And mm-hmm. then you start drilling down and you take in all the data from the investigation, the forensics, and also from what the family is saying. You know, the family and individuals, not this family in particular, but any family that is really close to an individual, they're going to have their own confirmation biases of what they're looking for, of what they think might have happened. And you look at all that because that gives you something to look at, examine. And in this case, if they say Snapchat should be there, but it's missing, what it does say is like, all right, look here to see if there's a wobble, as I always say.
Yeah.
And if there's a wobble, well, then that might be something to drill deeper on. And if you see a wobble or a deviation from what you're expecting, that's something you can now bring before a judge and do a deeper dive, a deeper research. Now you can start serving subpoenas to see if there's more there. But if you're not seeing one. It's all copacetic. In other words, if the baseline remains consistent, that things weren't deleted here, they're not deleted here. Stories are somewhat consistent, but inconsistencies that are commensurate to the level of potential intoxicants that were being used. You know, so that's what they're assessing in all these things.
Jen, what do you think? If this Snapchat does turn out to truly be have material deleted off of it, if there's things on his phone that were deleted, what does that mean for the investigation?
First of all, this is just, it's BS. I'm going to get this out here since my Wi-Fi is all in and out. I'm going to cut down to nuts and bolts here.
We're getting super spicy, Jen, today.
Super spicy, Jen.
Snapchats come and then they go. That is the whole thing about Snapchats. Yeah. You're not supposed to be able to see them, number one. Number two, I've been on these raft ups. These raft ups are insane. I lived in the Virgin Islands 4 years. You go out, it's melee, it's partying, it's people all over the place. No one has their phone. This is the where people don't care about their phones. Teenagers don't care about their phones. They're very engaged. They leave the phones on the boat because their $1,300 umbilical cord to the world is not going to be risked. And plus, they got a drink in one hand. They're commiserating with the other. They're not going to have it in the water. He's not doing stories also because guess what? He's a football player hoping for a scholarship. The number one thing, and I've had two kids recruited, one being recruited now and one that was recruited, you do not show underage drinking. So period, end of story. The Snapchat is all BS.
Fair points on that, too, on the recruiting angle of it. Very fair points.
And is there a lot? I mean, are we seeing just a lot of assumptions being made by the adults in the room of how they think their child would have been acting at that moment in time? That because on land, he's on his phone all the time. I mean, and so I get it. I get where they're coming from. His pattern of behavior is using Snapchat a lot, but maybe not specifically in this situation. Is that what we're looking at? And then that because it's a deviation from on land, but you also have to consider the setting to which it was at, that is not going on. And they're desperately searching for answers, that because there's nothing there, that's being translated into something nefarious when maybe it's a very simple explanation. My question would be, did anybody else have Snapchat rocking on that beach that day? And if they didn't, well, then he's kind of in line with everybody else. But I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, one of the things, too, is all the, they said all the phones were left on the boat. So actually, that's congruent. In other words, it wasn't just his that was left on the boat, all of them, to Jen's point. So you have a baseline of behavior of the people on that island. And to your point then, to Tony, it's not just what the family saw behind the scenes when he's on land. But, you know, that's why people put things out there so you can investigate it, so investigators know what to look at. But those are baseline behaviors that look pretty congruent. Jen, sorry.
It's Jen there. Jen frozen.
She froze.
I think she's frozen. She looks like she's there, but she's not. It's like
thinking.
She's a mannequin every now and then. And then when we say the magic words, hocus pocus alamagocus, she comes back alive. There's five of you who remember today's special from the 1970s and 80s and know exactly what I'm talking about. Behind the scenes, Robin, I mean, what do you the FBI is involved in this to some capacity. Is it limited to Nolan's phone, or does the FBI have jurisdiction to examine the devices of everyone involved here, even before or if this is officially classified as a crime, and if and when they obtain those devices? I mean, what would be their primary focus, you think, to be looking for on those devices of other folks, other than just Nolan himself?
So they're going to have access as much as access is allowed by the individual they're interviewing. So here I am, I'm out there, I'm conducting an investigation as an FBI agent. I'm going to be interviewing everyone I possibly can and writing it up. And part of that interview is, hey, do you mind if I have access to your phone? Can I look at your phone? And then I'm going to be looking at the text messages. I'm going to be looking at searches. I'm going to be looking for and establishing a baseline. In other words, I'm not looking for anything in particular. At first, what I'm looking for is, what is a normal day looking like? So here's what I'm going to do is probably me, I'm going to ask them, have you ever been out to this island before? Oh, you have? Can I see your phone from that time period? Because what I want to do is I want to establish, like, all right, if I've talked to a bunch of people that have been out to Horn Island before, I want to see what that past experience was like when something didn't go wrong. And I'm going to establish a baseline of how they communicated, Snapchats they did do or didn't do. I'm going to look at the patterns of behavior in this one time frame. I'm then going to then superimpose it to, all right, now let's bring it up to the present. What was different this time around, whether it's through the interview and then also through digital forensics. And I'm going to ask them permission to see all those types of things because they say they're being compliant and open with it. But I also know they enlisted lawyers that we talked about yesterday. So it's really going to depend on the amount of transparency they feel safe having. But at the very least, that's what I'm doing as an investigator. I'm going to establish a pattern behavior from past times, whether it's from them or others when they visit Horn Island, and then superimpose it over this time and see if there's a wobble in there anywhere that could have involved him.
Jen, if you're investigating this, let me ask you first, what sort of authority does the FBI have at this point to look at friends' phones of any sort of depth? And if they are, when they are, what are you looking for first on the friends' devices?
Well, the FBI has authority if granted by these individuals, because the problem is there is no probable cause to look at these phones right now. There just isn't. I was thinking, how am I going to write this affidavit? I can't write an affidavit showing there's probable cause that these people were involved in nefarious crimes, that they were hiding it, and that the phone could, you know, harbor indicia of the crimes. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. But everyone's cooperating. There is no information that none of these kids and their families are cooperating, despite what Al Sharpton and others are doing, trying to really quash that, in a sense, by starting to finger point. And you asked this earlier, and I know my Wi-Fi went out, but I heard you ask it. And that was, Jen, what's really happening here? And what I see is people ignoring facts and putting in their truths, what they think for a narrative, not that they're supported by a factual basis. But basically, what I want to get is consent searches for each of these phones, and I want to look. And that's what's going to happen.
It's consent searches right now, and but in something like this, I mean, cross the T's, dot the I's, and if there's nothing going on, great. It would be in the interest, if there's nothing going on, of everyone, in theory, you would think, to turn over the devices and say, here, take a look. So the truth can come out. There's nothing found here. But there's tremendous public pressure right now going on. As we know, this has already become such a polarized case where one side is screaming it's this, one side is screaming it's not this. Neither side has facts. Neither side knows truth. Nobody knows exactly what happened yet, but people have their confirmation bias on both ends of this. How dangerous is the confirmation bias right now for folks who may have a device that really there's nothing suspicious on it, but they don't want their name somehow ending up in the ether of this to end up popping up on somebody's social media and then be targeted for having been involved in something nefarious when they're just like, I just want to help. I just want to show you what's on my phone and I got nothing going on. But they're too scared to do that because of the vitriol that's going on right now.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I would argue that there are facts and evidence. We already have witness statements out there.
Okay.
We already know that an autopsy has been performed and that individuals involved in this investigation have at least those preliminary results. If you are the detective or case agent on this case, you are literally sitting there as it's being performed and you are already being told, yes, there was water in the lungs. Thus, we know it's a drowning. We don't see any signs of blunt force trauma. We don't see any petechia. We don't see any signs of strangulation. They have already been told that. That is what happens in the autopsy room. Mm-hmm. So law enforcement, that is why I believe they came out initially and said, listen, this looks like an accident. It does not look like there's anything nefarious. We also don't have any witnesses saying there was some sort of fight, some sort of struggle, anything bad occurred on that boat. In fact, we have the opposite. We have the NBC footage where they're specifically talking about their bilge isn't working and they're getting water on their boat. Yeah. So they want to head back. I mean, there's a lot of facts out here, but people don't like the facts they're seeing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Especially when I heard that new audio come out about the boat sinking. Again, it's just more confirmation, good data on the initial story that was told, actually a little bit more than I thought it was even going to be. But to your point, people are trying to fill in gaps for a narrative they're trying to keep creating. But so far, again, always living in the world of maybe when you're doing an investigation, because something could pop up to shift it one way or the other. But all the data so far is lining up with a horrendous, tragic incident. Yeah. So far.
I mean, I want to follow it wherever it may go. And I think that's the important thing, and not to go this way or that way, because and these are the facts that we know as of right now. Given that there were hundreds of people on this beach, you have a boat full of friends, a conspiracy doesn't really work very well, or a cover-up doesn't work very well when you have more than one person involved. A bunch of drunk teenagers. That's some conjecture there. I can't prove they were drinking. I don't know if they were drinking. Let's just make the assumption that there was probably drinking involved. So we'll work from that as a baseline. Some were probably not. Who the hell knows? But you have people, lots of them. When you have that many people that would have seen something if they saw something, how confident are you that the truth will surface here? And if there is anything nefarious, that would also surface, being the truth. If it's nefarious, there's people who will talk. They're not just going to be like, oh, okay, everybody, let's make this pact and we're never going to say anything about somebody killing our good friend. This doesn't make any sense. With the fact that there's so many people involved, does it make it so much more, how difficult does it make it for a cover-up to even exist this far in? We're like 2 weeks after this happened at this point.
Well, the more people you have involved, the more people, the more witnesses, the less likely you're going to get a cover-up, because it starts involving so many witnesses, so many individuals to be a part of it. And the bottom line is, what in the world would be the motive? Yeah. These were all friends. They didn't see color. I mean, they saw buddies. Mm-hmm. And they went out on a 4th of July trip. There was nothing, no information has surfaced. Robin talks a lot about leakage. There's zero leakage about some sort of, let's get the black guy on the boat. There's nothing like that. And it's really sad to see the spin that you see on this. Mm-hmm. I would also ask audience watchers, have you ever been in a riptide? Have you ever been?
I came up with the velocity there is big. I came up with the velocity of it yesterday on that, typically in that area, because it's it's about 12 miles offshore. Was it 10, 12 miles offshore? Yeah. The riptides through there are typically a lot faster than in many other places when the tide's going out. It is, what did I say yesterday? 12 feet per minute?
It's high. Yeah, I mean, anyone who's never been in a riptide has no idea what they're talking about, because and I find it interesting, some of the arguments that are being made of, like, he was an athlete. He was like, I don't care if you're Jesus. I don't care if you're Superman. If you get caught in that riptide and you're a human being, you're going with the riptide. There ain't no going back from that. And that's a scary, scary thing. And drownings, and I've said this 1,000 times too, they're not always, oh my God, he's out there drowning. It's more like you're having a drink over here. It's like, anybody seen Nolan? And that's how drownings tend to happen. Nolan's phone. Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, and that's when they actually really do happen too, because all the stats on it, when you combine the alcohol with the riptide, that is always the one that is a precursor for bad things happening in all the cases.
His phone was only retrieved after his mother checked Life 360. The allegations regarding the Snapchat data come from there. You also have other little pieces here and there of the story that have come out. Are there innocent explanations for the events that have come up here that have somewhat been conflicting? The boys saying he was going to stay with the girl. The girl says he was going with the boys. Are all of these, yes, they may be conflicting to a certain extent, but are they explainable with teenagers, alcohol, and being on a boat?
Yeah, absolutely. And they can both be true at the same time.
Yeah.
You could try to be picking up a girl and the girl says, yeah, I'm not interested. And the guy says, okay, I'm headed off with the boys. Or the guy said, I'm headed off with the boys and then tried to pick up the girl. I mean, it's not that anyone's lying. It's just that they're happening at different times. And again, as you point out, we've got alcohol involved. You know, they're young, they're teenagers. These events are absolute fun. They are party events. And to say, hey, I'm going to catch a ride back with the others because I'm kind of scoping out this girl is so typical in these settings.
Yeah. And I just looked it up. Typical in this area, the riptides can go from 1 to 2 feet per second all the way up to 8 feet per second. That equates to about 5 miles an hour plus, which is faster than almost any human being can swim. So that's how fast those riptides are, because that's what's part of the theory is that what's going on.
They are scary. They are deadly. I was in one several years ago, and it was scary as shit. And it was Little Harper who had was on an inflatable that was able to get over to me. This was in Hawaii, and I was able to grab onto it and get me out. And I was just right there in the water. I was trying to get a sea urchin. Actually, I was diving down. I kept trying to I'll get it. Then I dive back down, and I'm like, I'm not nearly the same place I was 2 minutes ago. And I didn't even realize how it had pulled me out so far. It's a scary, scary thing. We'll, of course, continue to cover this wherever it may go. And the reality is all the answers are not in yet. So we're not going to fill in blanks here or there for this narrative or that narrative. We're going to keep following the facts, and we're going to keep bringing them to you right here. Your 100%. Thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue our conversations.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.